Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I meet other people with famous family members and discuss how that has affected their journeys through life. My guest this week is Nicola Wren. Nicola is a writer and actress.
I'd never heard of Shakespeare in Love. When she told me she was an actress, I was like, well, me too, I'm just about to play Mole.
She studied at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama in London and has written and performed three shows at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival: 501 Things I Do in My Bedroom in 2015, Replay in 2017, and the critically acclaimed Superstar in the summer of 2019.
Do you think I've made myself a bit of an easier target because I've put myself out there in this way? And he was like, yes, even easier because you've associated yourself with Coldplay.
Nicola has also appeared in A Song for Jenny on BBC One, Staff Let's Flats on Channel 4, and in films including King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, and Chubby Funny. Nicola's brother is songwriter and lead singer of the band Coldplay, Chris Martin.
There was this really cool phase where, like, me and Rich would come up to London to hang out with Chris, and he'd be like, let's go get recognised. And we were like, yeah, let's do it, like, let's go.
Chris was born in Exeter and went to University College London, where he formed Coldplay in 1998 with bandmate Johnny Buckland.
The thing is, it doesn't matter how many jobs I'm working to pay my rent, a lot of people are going to assume that my brother's sorted it out for me.
They've since sold over 100 million records worldwide, and Chris was named on the Debrett's list of the most influential people in the UK due to both his music and his work as a philanthropist. Hello, Nicola.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Just come from giving a lot of money to charity.
Very good, and leads me to my first question. What did you think of your intro? Did I get enough in there? And also, what would your brother Chris think of his if he were ever listening to this podcast?
I liked my intro, and I thought it was really fair and nice, thanks. And I actually did, I was like, I have done three shows. Obviously, you know, we're talking about selling 60 tickets a day rather than 70,000. But I was grateful for it. I've thoroughly researched. I'm proud of the things that I've done, and I'm very proud of my brother, and that's a lovely intro, and it's nice to get Johnny in there because, you know, he doesn't get an awful lot of attention, and without Johnny there'd be no band. But I'm sure Chris would probably say something humble or grateful or some kind of LA thing.
Okay, well,
but be grateful for the nice intro.
We'll get into that. I wanted to bring up the show you did in Edinburgh, Superstar, first, because that's how I heard about you. I heard about the show and then got to watch a copy of the show. Really enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
On video. Your agent kindly sent it.
I know. Did she send it with a note that I find that video of live performance really saps the vibe, and so I was worried about it.
Well, she didn't.
Okay, well,
but
here it is.
I totally understand because I did stand up for years and had to send videos out, and it's just like, you just, you know, nobody hears the audience laughing as much as they honestly were, I promise.
Yeah, it's really just for the archives.
Well,
for the grandkids.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, but let's talk a little bit more about it. So do you want to maybe give a little synopsis of the show?
Sure. So Superstar is my autobiographical one-woman comedy play about growing up with four older siblings and desperately wanting to win their approval and thinking that after they saw me perform as a bunny rabbit in the village pantomime and clapped, that becoming a superstar actress would be the best way to get them to love me. And it's about me pursuing that as a career, and then what happens when my eldest brother actually did become a superstar, and how that changed my kind of trajectory a little bit. I mean, I still was really determined to be an actor, as you can tell from what I've been doing with my life. But I started to kind of hide the fact that I was related to Chris away from everyone. And it's a lot about me trying to find my own identity separate from Chris and then getting to a point where I realised that the best way to be comfortable with who I am as a person would be to actually embrace it rather than keep trying to hide it. But it's a lot about my other siblings as well. And it's a really fun, silly show about kind of how ludicrously arrogant I was when someone told me that I was good in the village pantomime. I thought it meant that I was going to be famous.
And as a result of the show, most importantly, not only did you get, you know, lots of great reviews and lots of great press about it.
Yeah, thank you.
But also, you got invited to come on Almost Famous,
which was all I wanted.
Which leads me to a question we ask everyone who comes on. How did you feel when you first were asked to come on this podcast? And it strikes me that in reality, you would just, because of the show you've done, it would be easy for you to come on the show or to talk about this stuff now, whereas a lot of people we found don't really feel that comfortable talking about their siblings or parental fame.
Well, I was not comfortable with it until this last year. And some, I still find it hard. I think it's like, I was, thank you for inviting me on the podcast. I think at first I was sceptical about its quality because I'd never heard it before. But then when I read more about it, and I like the premise a lot. And I think there is a, I much prefer talking in this kind of setting than in a more formal interview setting. It's like I really like being given the opportunity to actually express the whole sort of picture rather than, you know, a couple of sound bites that can get misconstrued and turned into quite a hideous headline in the Daily Mirror or something, which has happened in this last year as
well. Can you think of the headline? What's the headline you're thinking of in your head right now?
Chris Martin's secret sister changes her name to a pizza to avoid the limelight, which came after I did. I went on Good Morning Britain, which I wish I'd never done.
It wasn't with Morgan, though, was it?
It wasn't with Morgan. I almost wish it had been, because then another person would have looked like an arsehole, except just me. But no, I thought it'd be good if I told this story about how when I was searching for my stage name, which I had to come up with because there was another Nicola Martin on the cast, the online casting directory. And also I wanted to kind of have a kind of mental separation from my brother just because I was freaked out that people would think that if I got any success, it would be because of him. Anyway, I was searching for a stage name and I was in Pizza Express and I saw the Loren pizza on the menu. And I was like, Ren is a cool name. And then I realised that my grandmother was a Wren in the Second World War and chose the name. Anyway, I thought it'd be funny to just tell the Pizza Express story, which is in my show, on Good Morning Britain. And then I didn't realise that tabloid papers would only really pick that bit out to write about. So it haunts me to this day, but I did get a free pizza.
Well, I was going to say, so I saw on your Twitter that Pizza Express sent you a tweet. Did they retweet something you'd written? But I just thought you got Ren from La Ren, but actually it does work as Nico La Ren, which is what they then tweeted, which I thought was pretty clever.
Well, because I say it, no, I said it in the interview, because in the show I go, it's a whole bit where I'm like, La Ren, Nico,
got it,
La Ren. And so they sold it from me. Let's not give Pete the Professor credit for my material.
I apologise.
We can give them credit for their wonderful dough balls, but we can't give them credit for that. No, they tweeted me, and I was very excited about it. And then I asked on Twitter if I could have some free dough balls, and then sent them a YouTube video that I'd made of a character that I do sometimes called Georgia Kapupu.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's very funny.
Thank you. Who's a piss take of Georgia Kasulu, who was on... What even was she on?
I don't even know
The
NUA's
Essex.
Oh,
she's someone of those. Anyway, where I talk about making little balls of dough out of bread. Anyway, I sent it to them because I'd called the video Powered by Dough, and I was like, you know, this is very on brand for me. Mm-hmm. I also lost my virginity after Pizza Express.
You can't glaze over that. Because I was going to say, actually, this is all getting a little bit off topic, but Pizza Express No, not in a bad way. Pizza Express has a huge part in my childhood, actually, and life. It's my when I would see my dad every fortnight. Okay. He would take us to Pizza Express on Upper Richmond Road on Friday, and there's a jukebox, so me and my brother would just be
Pizza Express
on the jukebox. Yeah, it's really lovely. And I've always ordered the same pizza at Pizza Express, a very big part of my life.
What is it?
An American with extra ham and soft egg.
Okay, I would never have guessed that, garlic. Because it's not on the menu.
Well, the American is on the menu, but the new...
Well, I know, the American's my favourite.
I mean, if I'm feeling...
Soft egg.
If I'm feeling really out there, then I'll go American hot with extra soft egg.
But you've soft
got to have,
egg?
You've got to have soft egg on the
What are you
pizza.
Talking about, soft egg?
Well, if you say egg, then it might not be soft, so they just fry an egg on your pizza.
Oh. I've never had an egg on a pizza, but I like eggs on toast, so I imagine it's not that different.
It's really great. You should try it. But, so you're kind of... Your links to Pizza Express are strong and
Sorry,
impressive.
I know, I've gone on too much about Pizza Express. It's
No, there should be a whole podcast we do separately about Pizza Express, as far as I'm concerned.
I want them to sponsor the press night for my show.
Okay. Well, did you ever get the free dough balls?
Yes, we were getting there. Sorry. I was just going around about the houses on it. Sorry.
That's all right.
You can cut all of this.
Won't, shan't.
Please, I know, could get me another pizza. Anyway, they wrote to me and they were like, oh, we'd love to invite you to our Oxford Circus branch for a free meal with a guest. And then I wrote back and I was like, brilliant. She was like, give me your email, we'll set it up. I didn't receive an email. So about a week later, hello, Louisa. Sorry, you did say that you could come to Pizza Express for free and haven't received your email. Please could you let me know when we can come? I really chased that up and then... She sorted it out, and then we got there, and they totally forgotten our reservation.
Well, part of me, call me cynical, but part of me wonders who they hoped the guest you'd bring would be.
I don't know.
The devastating reality of being related to a star.
What, that people are always disappointed when I show up?
I didn't say disappointed. That's where you went to.
Oh, okay.
That is where you went to
in
your own
head.
It was in
your tone of voice.
No, that's just my tone
anyway,
of voice.
Anyway, I know you want to talk about Chris and not about pizzas.
No, I want to talk about you, but most importantly, before we move on, do you have garlic bread with cheese as a starter as well as dough balls or just dough balls?
No, just dough balls. But now you can get Doppio dough balls, which where you get 8 rather than 4. No, you get 16 rather than 8.
Are they the ones where you get the three sauces, like
yes.
the pesto and stuff?
Which
is great.
I won't go into this. I will actually just quickly, but basically I didn't order it because I thought I don't need those three dips. I didn't realise you get 16 dough balls. I thought it was just dough balls with three dips. Anyway, you get 16 dough balls and I wish I'd done it.
But they didn't send you a year supply of dough balls. They just gave you one free meal.
That's, one free meal.
To be honest, Pizza
so
Express,
far.
I'm disappointed with you. But, you know, I will always love you from the bottom of my heart.
And I'd like your sponsorship for everything I do.
Yes, Nicola would like that. So if you could just get in touch with her, Louisa, once again, that would be really helpful. So when did you first realise that your brother was famous? And how did it affect you?
Well, when I was 8, Coldplay were written about in the NME, which I didn't really know what it was mm-hmm. at the time because I was 8. But I remember cutting out the article and taking it into school and showing all of my friends and, like, bragging about it. And not bragging about it, actually just really proudly showing it around.
Do you remember what that was written about? Was it an EP they'd released and it was a review, or was it like,
yeah,
this is the next
so.
New great band? Or
I think it was just basically like they'd been noted. It was a small little article mm-hmm. that had come out that was like, this band have got a great first album coming out and we're excited about them. And it was probably a picture of Chris playing the guitar.
Right.
So I was really excited. Anyway, and then, I mean, the next few years are a bit of a, I can't really remember any specific moments until then when Chris, there was quite a fun phase where Chris was starting to get recognised quite a lot. And so me and my other brother, Rich, there's actually 5 of us, but Rich is the one closest to me.
What are the jobs that the 5 do? Because you talk about that in your show quite a lot. Is it ones?
Oh, I don't actually talk about their jobs.
Do you not?
No, but...
Where did I get that from?
I know,
then? Maybe I read it somewhere.
Well, you probably read it in one of the articles that I did.
Yeah, sorry.
One's an architect, one is a nurse, one is an Apache helicopter pilot.
Oh, that's achingly cool.
And one is me, and the other one's in the band.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Carry on. I'm interrupting.
No. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, so there was this really cool phase where, like, me and Rich would come up to London to hang out with Chris, and he'd be like, let's go get recognised. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. Like, let's go. And it was just really fun because nobody, the people that were recognising him were fans.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and then it all started to change once he met and started going out with Gwyneth. Because obviously,
that's
the paparazzi.
Gwyneth Paltrow, for any of you who've had your head buried under a rock for the last
Yes, Gwynnie P, which we won't refer to her as that ever again in our lives. Cut that. Yes, Gwyneth. And because obviously she had an awful lot more press attention for her personal life, obviously her going out with a young British rocker, if we can call him that, pop star.
His Wikipedia page says rock band Coldplay, and I didn't put rock band in the intro because I debated that very thing. Are they a rock band or are they a pop band?
I don't know.
I'm not really sure. Somewhere in between, I think.
I don't know, and I don't want to say the wrong thing. I think they're just, you know, they are what they are.
Yeah, they're Coldplay.
They're a subgenre.
Yeah. They've gone beyond.
It's poppy rock. It's gentle. It's good for the masses.
Yeah.
Anyway. So when that happened, there was a quite a lot, like the paparazzi, that was when the paparazzi started coming to our house, which was in the middle of a village in Exeter, and it was all a bit weird. And then I was doing a production of Wind in the Willows in Exeter city centre with like my local amateur dramatic group, and Chris and Gwyneth came to watch it, and they snuck in late with their caps on. And I was just really excited that they were there. But then when I got backstage, everybody, I just remember all the cast and crew and lots of, you know, brothers and sisters of all the other cast had come backstage. Everyone was swarming around Chris and Gwyneth and getting their autographs and pictures and all their stuff. And that was kind of the moment where everything changed. And I just was like, oh, okay. That he's more interesting than me.
Did it deflate? Do you remember a feeling of deflation?
I remember it just being really weird and really proud, but also probably a bit annoyed because I not because people were swarming around him, but because I wanted his attention rather than him to be giving it to all the fans.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to him and Gwyneth on my own, not because I gave a crap about Gwyneth being famous. I didn't know who she was. I'd never heard of Shakespeare in Love. When she told me she was an actress, I was like, well, me too. I'm just about to play Mole. And she was just like, thought I was sweet.
You say something in your show that she said a line. Do you want to just say that and tell me, please tell me it's true because it's hilarious.
That I was so believable as a mole.
So she said that you...
She said a lot of really nice things about my performance. To put too many of them in the show would be arrogant. She said my performance as mole was so believable.
That's so brilliant. That is so brilliant.
But she was so lovely and supportive and sweet. But I just wanted their attention for myself. So my problem really has never been that I'm jealous of the attention that my brother gets from other people. It's that I'm jealous of the attention other people get from my brother.
Yeah. No, I totally understand.
Confession?
No. It doesn't feel like confession. It feels real.
He doesn't listen to this.
It feels real to me. But I also just want to say, and if I were you, for your show Superstar, I would have put on the poster, so believable, Gwyneth Paltrow. That would have been such a great quote to have on
there. I didn't want to use any of it in the marketing.
I see. What was the decision making behind that?
That I don't... It's not a show that's solely about my brother being Chris, and so it's about all my siblings. But also, I don't think it's... I know that in the press it's interesting and everything, but I didn't want to missell my show as a kind of reveal all about a celebrity thing. And I was also already conscious that a lot of people would think that the reason I was talking about Chris in it was to get more attention and to sell more tickets. And actually, the reality is that I was doing it because I just had to get it off my chest in order to kind of creatively move on with my life. I know that sounds really pretentious, but it's true.
It doesn't.
And so I thought, and also it's like, I want people to be coming to the show who have all kinds of experiences with their siblings. You know, a lot of people have an older sibling that's way more successful than them, but they might be a banker, or it might be that they're just their parents' favourite. And I wanted people to see my show and go like, oh, it's about siblings. I want to see that, rather than, oh, it's about Chris Martin's little sister. Let's see that. Mm-hmm. In reality, obviously, a lot of people wanted to just see Chris Martin's sister, or probably just hope that he might be there.
So in terms of then, how do you feel about that in general? So in terms of the word nepotism, which I think is a really important part of what this podcast is about, because I grew up thinking I could never mention the fact that my stepfather was famous because I wanted to get into comedy and TV, and I thought they'd think, oh, you're only there because of that person, right?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the fact that you're able to be honest now and say the reality is a lot of people came to see me because of that element of it? Does any part of you feel anxious about that or anything, or is it, it's just something that has helped?
No, I hate that. I feel exactly the way that you, I did feel exactly the way that you felt in terms of, I can't mention it because the thing is, it doesn't matter how many jobs I'm working in terms of like to pay my rent and how self-sufficient I am and like financially, anything that I do, a lot of people are going to assume that my brother's sorted it out for me. A lot of people assume that my brother pays my rent or that my parents pay my rent or, you know, and that's just the reality of it.
I mean, so, to be honest, if your parents don't pay your rent, you're one of the few people in London whose parents don't pay their rent.
Well, one of the few middle-class people.
In acting.
And I never like, I don't, now I'm doing it, aren't I? But I don't like to like, I'm not blowing my own trumpet by being like, look at me, I work for my own money, actually. It's like, that's just, to me, standard what you need to do in life is make your own money because it feels good and you need it. And so sometimes, without wanting to be like, I work so hard. It's like, I do work hard and it slightly pisses me off that I know that a lot of people assume that I probably don't or don't need to, whereas it's actually like, well, I want to and I do need to because I wouldn't want my brother or expect my brother to pay for my life.
My question is, I wonder what...
If I didn't answer your question,
sorry. No. I wonder how much of it is people genuinely assuming that and how much of it is you assuming that people assume that.
Probably because, mostly the latter.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, no one cares, really.
No one cares about anyone except themselves.
If you're, like, this is the thing. Yeah, it's true. So with the nepotism thing, what was good, I just knew that I need to just get over it, basically. I do find it a bit frustrating and...
You talked about owning your own narrative. I think that sums it up really well.
That's the thing. It's like, unfortunately... No, not unfortunately, but this is the situation, is that my brother is this person. I know what I do every day. My friends know what I do every day to make my career happen and how hard I work for that. And part of writing and putting on my own shows was part of me saying, well, if people are going to assume that Chris is helping me if I ever get any success, at least I'm going to know that I'm good in my own right because I've written these plays and I've sold tickets without talking about Chris. I sold out my last run without talking about it. And so that's why with this show, I didn't aim to like sell any more tickets than I'd sold with my last show. I booked the same capacity venue because I knew that on my own right, I could sell that out.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of tickets, but, you know, it's an achievement to sell it.
You took a previous show to New York and Soho Theatre as well, didn't you?
Yeah. And that was before anyone knew anything about Chris. So I had to get to that point where I trusted it myself. That I was like, well, I know I'm doing this because I'm hardworking and I've got something to say. And, you know, I want to make art and theatre and comedy. And so if I mention the Chris thing, I'm just going to have to get over it. And then... Of course, as soon as I did any interviews like on the Good Morning Britain and then the Daily Mail wrote about it, I obviously read all sort of 300 comments that were like, she's a fringe actress passing her prime that's just trying to cash in now. And it's like, well, okay. Everyone's now said everything I've ever been scared of people saying, so I'm kind of just free.
When it comes to it, and I've talked about this with some of our other guests, actually, when it comes to it, the proof is in the pudding. And like you said, you know, the reality is, are you good or not? So, you know, I think the perfect example of that is, I personally think that reviewers will go into a show of yours about that, wanting it to be shit.
One of the advantages of having a celebrity and famous sibling who's successful is that when I got a bad review, I called up my brother and I was really upset. And he was like, look, you have to remember that, first of all, if you've made something that felt in your heart that was the right thing to make and that you needed to make it, then fuck what they say. But also remember that a lot of reviewers are trying to make a name for themselves as well, and you're way more likely to click on a 1-star review than you are to click on a 3 and one with a headline that's
they've got
like,
to sell. They've got to sell papers and keep their jobs.
So,
Everyone's keeping their jobs. And also what I'd say, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong here or being mean, but I'd say Coldplay, a great example of a band or an artist who are so successful that people want to slag them off whether they're good or not, or whether they like the music or not. So for me, you know, I know in comedy, certainly Michael McIntyre is the perfect example. A brilliant comedian, he's so good at his art. And his peers, a lot of them just slag him off because he's so successful, he's crossed over into the mainstream. And people tend to hate that. So, you know, in reality, like you said, it's like reviewers are just trying to sell yeah, keep their jobs
exactly.
and sell papers.
And there's a lot of like jealousy and I think probably artistic frustration if you're someone who's like critiques things for a living. It's like, well, yeah.
They wanted. They wanted to be artists
yourself?
Themselves. Exactly.
What That's was a bit of a cliche, though, for me to say. Sorry.
It's all right. I completely agree with the cliche. And whenever people have ever been mean about anything I've done, I think about that.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What was your relationship with Chris like when you were growing up?
I
guess before Coldplay, I guess, is kind of more interesting.
Well, he is 13 years older than me, and so it was a really nice thing of, there's not really any sibling rivalry when there's that much of an age gap, because he'd already had three younger siblings, so it was over the whole, like, oh, I might have to split the attention of my parents. I mean, I feel like that's what he was probably like. He might say differently, but so our whole relationship was just such fun, and, like, he was my absolute hero, and we would just, but all of my brothers were really, and but him in particular, because we're both quite creative, and we just laughed a lot, and whatever he said I took as like gospel. And I remember going and being like, I was about to go and buy my first ever album from Virgin Megastores, and I was like, what should I get, Chris? And I was like, 7. And he was like, Oasis, get Oasis, definitely maybe. I was like, cool, yeah, cool. And I got definitely maybe, and I sat in my bedroom and I'm just like, I don't get this at all. But, and then I was like, got my godmother gave me S Club 7, S Club 7's album, and I was like, yes, cool. And then, but I pretended that definitely maybe was my favourite album for a really long time.
Oh, you wanted him to know that you liked the same stuff that he liked, that's lovely.
Yeah, I did that with all of them, really.
You talked about how when you went to school at 11, mm-hmm, your dad warned you that people would try and use you to get to your brother.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he meant by that, and how did that feel, and what did that mean kind of as you, in your early school days?
Yeah, he still says that to me now. I love my dad so much, but sometimes he doesn't say very helpful things. Cut that. I love my dad. So dad always said, be careful, because people will use you to get to your brother. And I think what he meant was that that a lot of the time people will pretend to like me and maybe say things that they think I want to hear because they want to find out something about Chris and his personal life. I think like when I, but now when I think about it, when I'm talking about it, I'm like, well, it's quite silly actually, because other than people trying to get free tickets and being nice to me for fake reasons, like, what are they going to do? Like, they can't, I'm not really useful for much in terms of being used to get to my brother. It's like,
but especially at the age of 11, I would have thought, I mean, I hadn't, before you said, you know, that was, I don't know if you, did you use the word dangerous or quite a weird, or whatever word you said? It's, I didn't really think about it, but it strikes me that actually to say that to you at that age might be quite, must have been quite confusing to try and understand. I wouldn't have understood that at 11, I don't think.
Yeah, but I think it just made me, and it wasn't just my dad saying that, you know, there was also a lot of stuff changing. Like, there was paparazzi showing up at our house and people trying to get answers about things and trick, you know, the way paparazzi talk to you is like they try and trick you into telling stuff and then they spin it. And so it's like when you see that when you're 10 or 11, it's like, oh, right, people aren't people aren't trustworthy and people are going to, you know, trick me into saying things and people are going to want tickets to my brother's show. And so I just started to become really, I just started to basically become not very trusting of people. And I acted normally and I was really outwardly confident and everything, but as soon as someone was nice to me or if someone fancied me or I heard that they fancied me or whatever, I was like, yeah, but they just want, they're just interested because of Chris. And that carried on. I still have that today. Like, you know, I had a meeting with someone yesterday and I was like, I think they just want, they're just interested in what we're talking about because of the name, you know? And
can I just ask, do you think that would have been, do you think at the age of 11 or soon after, that's something that you would have picked up on or thought anyway? Or do you think your dad saying that led you into that kind of lack of trust much sooner?
I mean, I don't want to put my dad too much in the shit because it's not all his fault. I think I was starting to feel that already, but yes, it did not help having my dad be like, people are going to use you, don't trust anyone.
I also think it's good advice.
On top of him telling me that all men are shits and that, what else do you tell me?
My mum says that
Lots
as well.
Lots of good advice.
My mum says all men are shits. I mean, I think maybe
that's
got to
be the default position, my dad says, and then if they're not a shit, they need to prove to you that they're not a shit.
Yeah. My mum is all men are shits, except you. You're the different one.
And that's and where mum's probably wrong, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's the most dangerous thing she's ever actually said to me. No, I'm not trying to throw your dad on the bus. I think it's also really good advice.
Yeah, it's totally good advice. I think probably it was a bit too soon, maybe, or just not, probably not clear enough.
Yeah.
And I think I was lacking the kind of deep inner confidence that I needed to be able to go, like, okay, well, if they're using me, then fuck them, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I was, like, deep down, even though I was so confident on the outside because I was doing all this acting and stuff, but what my show explores is about the fact that I was acting all the time to try and impress people rather than just because I love doing it. And because I was never really, I never really trusted that just me was going to be interesting enough. Mm. And I found it a bit overwhelming. And like deep down to not know if people really like you for you is just a bit tiring, really.
And you mentioned that that's a feeling you still have now. So in terms of your personal relationships, how much, you know, how much does that part of your life, having a famous brother, affect your actual personal, or how much has it affected your personal relationships?
Well, I'm so lucky because I've got so many good friends. And so that's absolutely fine. I think part of the reason I made this show Superstar was because I wanted, it was my way of kind of combating the fear when I meet someone new of wondering, like, do they know about Chris? Who's told them? How do they know? Like, what do they think? What kind of preconception they made about me? I was like, if I put it out there into the world and I just own it and I've made my show about it, then I don't need to worry about those things anymore because I'll just assume that everyone knows.
Yeah.
And if they don't know and I bring it up at some point because I'm talking about the show, then they'll find out and maybe they'll think I've name dropped, but probably not. And it just, I just wanted to like free it up. But it does mean that, like, yeah, well, I'm single and I'm nervous to like go on any apps and stuff because if someone saw my name and then typed it into Google, then it would come up with an article from the Telegraph or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd know before going on the first date. So that, I don't want to go on the apps anyway, to be honest, I like being alone. But I, at the moment, not forever.
Yeah.
Maybe forever, who knows? But sometimes I think, actually, I'm going to be alone forever because I'll never meet anyone that I can really trust, like, just likes me for me. But that's really bleak.
That would be worse.
And I don't really believe that. That's just on a really bad day.
It would be worse if you were a superstar, though, wouldn't it? Like, as and when
no,
you...
No, it wouldn't, because the thing is, I'm not famous, but what I'm famous for is somebody else being right. really good at something, rather than, like, on my own merits. So... Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I just got really aggressive about that. But, like, that's the tricky thing. It's like, people are interested in me not because of something I've achieved or anything wonderful that I've done, but because of something wonderful somebody else has done. And so it's like, I don't deserve any of this attention.
Hmm.
And...
But you still have your anonymity, whereas I always think...
Well, I've just lost that, haven't I? I'm bloody making a show about it. But no, I did it for the right reasons,
but,
so it was fine.
But I think in terms... What I'm saying is, as and when you become a famous actress... then you will lose the ability to walk down the street without people noticing, and therefore that will make, for me, I've always thought about, I thought quite a lot about the possibility of fame down the years. Because right. I've always personally thought the worst thing about it for me would be not being able to walk down the street without people looking, and therefore, in a similar way to what you're talking about, actually, whenever anyone meets you, just thinking, oh, they're interested in me because...
Yeah, but
I'm
I think
on TV or whatever.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I'm sorry that I probably jumped to a different answer than what you were asking for. But I think you're totally right, and the anonymity thing terrifies me, and that was something that I was always, because I was like, even if my brother had never become famous, I would have always wanted to be an actor and probably to have been famous myself, which I'm not now really aiming for fame. I'm just sort of aiming to be able to make work, but. I was really scared of the loss of anonymity, and because I was so arrogant as a kid with, like, thinking that I was really good at acting and thinking that that would automatically make me a superstar, I just assumed I was going to be really famous. So I was like, oh, my God, well, then I won't be able to go anywhere and have to start wearing a cap, and caps look really bad on me, and, you know, all this stupid stuff.
And I think you've talked about this, none of this helped by the fact that, you know, your brother, that happened to your brother, so you must have assumed being young that that would automatically happen to you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, it was like Chris left the village, went to London, became a star. I'll do the same.
Yeah.
When the time is right. I was so convinced that I was going to be a success that when they came to do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the film, auditions in Exeter, and they were open call auditions, I didn't go because I was like, I'll get the part and I'm not going to be able to focus on my schoolwork for a year.
For the Johnny Depp one?
I think it was that one.
Would that have been the right time? Yeah, it must have been.
But I was like,
Gene Wilder one.
I was like, I can't go to the audition because I'll get it. And I need to focus on school.
I'm ruling myself
like,
out of this because it's too
asshole.
Easy. Yeah, that's hilarious.
But I was from a really small village where I was good in the pantomime, and everyone was like, oh, you're going to be well good and successful, you know. And then Chris actually did do that. So, of course, my little brain was like, yes, I will be a star. And then I had to kill her off when I got into my 20s.
And then the real life of trying to be an actress, the struggling life of an actor became real.
Which I like. I like the struggle.
Yeah?
Yeah, not every day. But I think it makes you better.
Yeah, you have to...
And once you become famous, no one says no to you. And then, you know, once you're not having any struggle, you haven't really got anything to write about.
Yeah, just never.
I mean, you
can
find them, but well, I don't think being famous is all it's cracked up to be.
You're looking for success and doing success in doing what you love rather than the fame of it. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. What you mentioned before about the fear of people treating you differently because of who your brother was, but have you got lots of examples or any examples you can think of how people genuinely have treated you differently because of it, and how times where that's really affected you?
When I was working in a pub, for example, and then people found out. About it, I told one person, and then they inevitably told other people. People were like, why are you working here if your brother's so rich? Right. And you're like, well, I need a job and I don't want my brother to pay for my life. So it's like little assumptions like that that are kind of a bit grating. And then you get the classic, like, how's your brother? And I'm like, which one? I've got three. And it's like, you know the one. And I'm like, you asked me about Chris. And they're like, well, I didn't want to be that guy. And I was like, well, you are that guy, aren't you? Because you just asked me, how's my brother? And you meant Chris. So it's like that kind of thing.
Is that from strangers?
I'm sure when
or
I leave
people,
here, I'll probably think of a sort of example that has had more of a kind of effect on me. I think it's just knowing that, like, people can say things like,
I think the fact that it's in,
she's got that because she's the
nepotism thing. But I think what's most interesting, and we've touched on this a bit, is how much of it is probably in your head.
Compared
to, you know, the worst case scenario is in your head the whole time, and the reality is actually a lot less real.
Yeah. Although this year, having read all those comments on the Daily Mail, was actually in a way validating for all of my fears, because I was like, oh yeah, I've always been scared that if I talk about Crest, people will say I'm using it. People will say like no one cares, like not no one cares, but like be like, you know, she's desperate and she's not even good, or they're not even good, like just shitty things.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and they've all said it. So,
but they're not
that
real
stuff
people,
was in my head, but...
They're people who, you know, social media has allowed them, has given them a forum that didn't exist before. So that it's these people who just make the most out of, you know, they do that because they're looking for a bite. They're looking to try and get a reaction from people they'd never be able to converse with before, or other people who have similar mindsets. It's people with negative mindsets. That's why I mean, I guess my way of looking at it is, and I've never had trolling on that level, but I used to do a lot of stuff like on YouTube, and therefore get quite a lot of people calling me a ginger cunt. And
oh, that's not fair.
I know, it's barely even like strawberry coloured.
No, but ginger's lovely, but
but you just have to. I personally think you find a mindset where you're like, well, these people would never say that to my face, so they're not really real people. They're just people who have been given this forum.
Right. They were actually just like the online manifestation of my inner thoughts and fears.
And they're jealous as well. They're jealous because they're not doing anything. It's the same as the critics, really. It's the as the reviewers. Yeah. Sorry, they're jealous because they're not creating anything. They're not putting themselves out there. Mm. You are. They wish they could, and so they're looking to try and find something they can pick at you. You know, and find a reason why you're doing it and they're not.
I discussed this with my brother. You know, doing this show, I made myself an easy target. And he was like, and when I was talking to him about my bad reviews, there's only a couple of them, by the way. But when I was talking to him about them, I was like, do you think I've made myself a bit of an easier target because I've put myself out there in this way? And he was like, yes, and you've done it like even easier because you've associated yourself with Coldplay, which people, it's like a punchline and people love to hate the band. So,
I mean, can I just say, your brother does always seem like he comes across as just a really nice bloke, and that's a good example of that.
But does he come across as nice as I do? No, I'm joking. Do you think he's as fun as me? No, thank you. He is a nice guy. And the thing is that we're just like quite a normal, well, dysfunctional like any family, but we're quite a normal middle-class family who are just trying to do good stuff and like make the world a nicer place for the people that we meet.
Yeah.
And I think people also like to kind of hate on that a little bit, because it's like, you haven't struggled enough and you haven't, and it's like, well, we're just doing our best with what we got, really. And if he's, you know, and he's just a nice dude.
I really like that comment. That's really nice, him kind of being self-deprecating about Coldplay. I think that's hilarious. I should say, because I should have probably said it earlier, Coldplay's first three albums they were all my first three breakup albums. They came perfect times for my first three breakups. So,
I'm sorry.
You know, they got me through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And then I
had what was your favourite one?
Parachutes is the best Coldplay album.
In your opinion, I like X and Y, which famously the worst one. But that was like, that came out when I was 14.
I like X and Y more than most people like X and Y. But I think Parachutes is the best album.
Yeah, Parachutes is brilliant. I like Viva La Vida. I like all of them. I love my brother.
Viva La Vida is all right. Do you know what? I don't think I've listened to one since Viva La Vida.
And is it that someone, people stopped dumping you, or that you just didn't find them as relatable for a heartbreak situation?
Do you know what I find quite interesting about that is I didn't say I'd been dumped, did I? I said they were breakup albums, and you assumed that I'd been dumped. Is that because of what you see?
No,
because
not
of my age,
all.
My
no.
ginger hair that you talked about before?
It's not even that ginger, but also Thank gingers you. Are great.
I agree. I once did a grade A karaoke version of Shiver in New York.
That's
it was really
awful.
my greatest ever karaoke moment. I've never found it since. I've always wanted to do Radiohead at karaoke, but I think I might clear the bar,
Creep.
So I never do it.
That would be a good karaoke one.
It's too Creep is just too obvious.
Okay,
I'd want to do all 7 minutes of Paranoid Android if I thought I could get away with it, but I don't think I could. So I'm quite interested in the fact that obviously at that little period of your life, because of who Chris married, and you wanting to be an actress, a famous actress came into your life.
Mm-hmm.
How did that affect your expectations of being an actress yourself?
Well, I've given you the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory story. Mm-hmm. So already my expectations were pretty high. And then, but like I say, I had no concept of what Gwyneth's fame meant. I'd never heard of her.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I'll give a shit. Mm. I just liked that she stroked my hair and was really affectionate with me and really fun. And
she comes across as a lovely person as well, you know.
Yeah, she was great.
I listened to her on Dax Shepherd's podcast and she came across as really open and honest.
And she gets so much shit. And a lot of it, she makes herself an easy target in a lot of ways too, because she's, you know, puts herself out there and sometimes suggests quite ludicrous things. But she's, again, like, you know, she's not doing anything bad. She's not trying to hurt anybody. But anyway, so when she came into my life, it was amazing. And, like, you know, she... But I don't... I didn't have her in my head as... I didn't think about her as a famous actress. I just thought about her as my brother's girlfriend that I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
And that used to call me every night when I was at boarding school and I was homesick. And we used to speak on the phone and, like, yeah.
That is the
amazing.
Lovely. That is the loveliest thing.
Give Gwyneth some good press.
Is so lovely.
So, I like I say, I already had the kind of arrogant assumption that my career would be fine. But I even then, when Chris started becoming famous, I always knew that I would do it on my own because I didn't think I would need any help.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, I don't need nepotism because I'm...
Yeah.
Did you see me play Mole?
Yeah.
I was so believable. Like,
but that's about...
I know this is embarrassing for me to admit, and this is when with my show, it's like, I'm admitting how stupid I was, you know, and how cocky, and not cocky, but just sort of naive and silly. So it's like, yes, I'm putting the thing about Chris out there, but it's like I'm making myself quite vulnerable as well to the world with the show in the hopes that people come and see it and relate to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a segue back to the show. I have a show.
probably a good time to mention the show's transferring, isn't it?
Oh, stop it. It's not like I told you to mention it. The show's transferring to the Southwark Playhouse in London. November the 26th we open, and
so
then close on December the 21st.
Have you started thinking about what your next show will be?
I'm not going to make another one-woman show. I feel like now I'm going to start writing TV, and now I'm going to write stuff that's not about me.
I've read that you've been writing a sitcom or working on a sitcom thing, is that right?
I was in the last year on one that was about me and my mother.
Oh, yeah. Because you lived together just with each other in London when you went to college.
Yeah, exactly. That's, and then afterwards, when I, in between uni and finding a house, I lived with her. As in finding another flat to rent.
Are there some funny... Have you got any funny stories just off the top of your head? Some strange stuff that happened?
Well, so Mum really doesn't like it if neighbours are noisy. And so one day, I was like asleep and the neighbours were being a bit noisy, so I was sort of stirring. And then suddenly I heard my mother just like... It's a small little flat, it's just a two-bedroom flat, and she was stomping down the corridor. And then suddenly I heard this banging, and I went into her room, and she was standing, hanging out of her window with a broom, and she was knocking the window.
Oh, my God.
She was, like, leaning the broom down to the downstairs flat's window, being like, you'll be quiet, it's 3 a.m. And it was very embarrassing and very funny. They hadn't been answering the door, that's why she'd gone to such drastic measures.
Did she get them served with an asbo?
No. They were just young musical theatre students having a lovely song and dance at 3 a.m. in the morning. But I'm writing that, but now I'm writing a couple of different things. I'm writing an adaptation of my last play, Replay, and I want to write something a bit darker now. Because
mm-hmm.
Superstar was really fun and I wanted to make something really fun. Mm-hmm. And it was an experiment in can I be myself on stage. And having done it, I'm like, I don't need to do that anymore. And I think this was the story that was like burning to get out of me for such a long time. And now it's done. I feel really liberated creatively.
Have you ever done stand-up?
Yeah, I did a tiny bit about... Actually, I won't tell you what it was about. It was really embarrassing. But I did a little bit at the Soho Theatre, like after doing a course. But I hated it.
Really?
I don't know how you guys do it.
What did you hate about it?
I don't know. I think it's so... I think it's actually the fact that you're kind of being yourself. I was kind of being myself, but I'm also kind of trying to create a persona. And I just couldn't get into that. It's like, for me, I either needed to be a character or be totally myself. And totally myself doesn't have punchy one-liners. I've got stories and anecdotes. And that's why my show is quite anecdotal, but the stand-up, there's too much pressure to be
funny,
zingy and funny. Yeah. And actually, I like to just more engage people in a longer story that has a few laughs along the way.
You can definitely do that as stand-up. It's just I think the thing you said about persona is key. And a story that I heard that I always relate to when it comes to this is that apparently back in the early 80s, a comedian from then told me this story. Jack D was a really, really terrible stand-up. And then one day out of nowhere, he came and did a gig and was just in a terrible mood and suddenly delivered the same stuff, but in a really terrible mood, miserable Jack D way. And suddenly the audience really reacted and his persona was born. And then everything that he wrote related so well to that persona that it was just like a natural fit.
Yeah, I think I just didn't know what my persona would be. But that happens in The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
Which I've
seen one episode of that.
Yeah, I think stand-ups hate it, don't they? A lot of stand-ups hate that show. But she has that thing. It's like when she comes on stage and she's angry and she's like gone wild, basically, that's when it's like, whoa, she's amazing. Mm. But then there's a lot of scenes where we see her kind of doing stuff and it's a bit more kind of friendly and sweet and it doesn't really fly. So I think I just didn't know what my persona was, really.
The reason I asked is because...
You think I should do it?
Yeah. I would have been surprised if you said either A, you hadn't, or you hadn't thought about it, because the way that you are on stage and what you're delivering and even how you come across here kind of naturally, I think, lends itself to funny stuff.
Thank you. Well, that was what I wanted to do with Superstar, because my last play was really serious.
I mean, what I'm saying is you should do it again and keep trying. Go and do the Gong Show at the Comedy Store. Don't.
No, what's the Gong Show?
Have you never heard of it? Go and see the Gong Show. It's a bear pit. It's the last Monday of every month. It's a rite of passage for comedians. Go and watch it. And you have to try and stay on stage for 5 minutes without them gonging you off. And three people in the crowd have red cards. And if they all go up, you get gonged off. But at the same time, you're getting heckled not only by the audience, but also by the people on the mics behind, like kind of backstage. And it's a real rite of passage.
Okay.
And it's horrible, but also very fascinating. I can really recommend it.
Yeah.
And to anyone listening, like, it's...
Gong Show, see you there.
It's been going for like 3 decades.
Maybe Superstar is like my segue into some kind of stand-up thing. I don't know.
I that's why I asked, because naturally I really think it is.
That's not what the plan was, but I think I love comedy and I love making people laugh so much. And
Have you... Difficult question, maybe. Have you ever felt any resentment towards your brother's success?
I haven't ever felt resentment to my brother.
Mm-hmm.
I've never resented my brother for his success in terms of being like, how has he got all that and I haven't? I just admire my brother and I think he's so talented and so hardworking and inspirational to me, at the risk of sounding really cheesy. But I do resent what fame does to people. I do resent what I said at the beginning of this podcast, I think, was that like it meant that my brother couldn't give me as much attention.
Yeah.
How do you
think your relationship with your brother would be different now if he hadn't been famous?
We have a really good relationship now. But that's really hard to say because I just don't know.
Mm.
I think I like, don't know, probably, he'd probably be in England.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a period of time where I didn't really get to speak to him or see him very much. And because I think just there was a lot going on with his work and a lot of people demanding a lot of things from him. And that was a bit I found sort of hard. But then I fixed that. And
you fixed it. You fixed it.
No,
by
let's not make a thing about fix you in this.
Oh no, I wasn't going to. I was going to say fixed it by discussing it with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
I did some therapy, and then we had a good chat. And
but what comes across really well from a few things you've said is that clearly, you know, despite everything, it seems like he's the same person, and you can contact him if you need support.
Yes,
and all
yeah,
of that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He's so, he's great. But I just, you know, when you have the sort of brother who's your hero and you're until the age of 11, and then suddenly they're much less easy to get in touch with, and they're much more in demand from a lot of people, and they are experiencing fame for the first time, and that's all very like, whoa. And then you've got your little 14-year-old sister who's just starting her period. It's like, that's not going to be the most interesting thing going on. And so from my perspective, it felt like I'd lost him for a while. But then not because he, not, it wasn't like, oh, he's lost to me because he's on heroin. And but it's just that he just had a lot more demands on his time, and then had kids, and that's somewhat another demand. But then a few years ago, I kind of started to come to terms with the whole thing. And I think that's why I really didn't like people asking me about it as well, because I was really sad that I didn't have the relationship with my brother that people thought that I did. So when people were asking me questions about him, I couldn't answer them. And this isn't me saying this is any of his fault. It was just the situation. But then once I sort of started to look at it, and I was like, okay, probably I should say, you know, I miss you to my brother. And I did. And it was, he was really lovely. And since then, we kind of, you know, we have a really good relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why I felt comfortable to make this show now, because I feel like we do share. We have more of a relationship that I would want.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really deep.
That was great.
But also, yeah.
Hold on, let me bring it down a peg or two. Let me bring down tone. You said in an article that I read, if I wanted to cash in on being Chris Martin's sister, I would have gone on Love Island.
They didn't put the end of the quote, which was, but I don't have the body.
I really wish I'd been able to see the end of the quote. That actually makes it much funnier and much more enjoyable.
Okay, so what did you think when you read that? Because I was worried when they put that in. That I was arrogant and that I assumed I could get onto Love Island.
No, do you know what? Not at all.
What did you think?
And I would tell you if I'd thought that. I just thought that was the press classically picking up on something that probably wasn't in context.
Yeah. So what it's just a joke that I came up with that then I told the journalist and...
I mean, but also bear in mind this, I'm looking at that...
journalist actually though, that one.
I'm looking at that specifically in terms of this project for me. So it's quite a self-involved way of looking at it anyway. So I'd probably ask someone else what they think about it. They might have a more different way of looking at it.
I hope people just... The kind of people that are going to enjoy my show are the kind of people that would have found that a bit funny. But also, it's, they did cut out the bit about I'm in the bod.
Well, what it made me think is I wanted to know if you've ever had any kind of weird, bizarre offers or opportunities like that that you've either turned down or accepted.
Not yet, because I only told anyone about Chris in the last sort of 8 months.
I know, but people are very quick. You'll be on Strictly before we know it.
Actually, I think I'd be more likely to be invited on like Celebrity Big Brother, because Strictly actually gets quite good people on.
That's true.
Although they've at least done enough in the public eye that...
Yeah.
Oh, have they though? Are they people that have just gone on Love Island? I haven't, I'm not watching this year. But Love Island, come off. What is that?
Well, Love Island, you have to be an influencer now to go on Love Island. You have to have at least 25,000 Instagram followers.
Seriously? But then they only go on to get more followers.
That's true.
Yeah, but so that's the thing. So actually, my brother Al and I always used to joke that we could be asked to be X Factor judges. But that was when Danny Minogue got asked. Not to say, she is a musician in her own right.
I know.
But my brother was always like, yeah, I could be a judge on the X Factor from Chris's brother. Cut that. Because he'd kill me.
So no opportunities.
He'd absolutely kill me for him.
If you started getting those opportunities, how do you think you'd feel?
I would just say no, thank you. It's
so if I put
it's just
so
not, I'm just
put,
not interested.
If I put £500,000 in a briefcase in front of your face, and it's literally the cash is there, and for that cash you have to go on, let me go into my Rolodex of reality shows, Dancing on Ice. Do you think you'd find it easy to say no?
Dancing on Ice? I don't really care about the cash. I just quite like doing the show. You're not giving enough context to that, because. Is that now that someone, so they've come, and so like, I'm going to be on Dancing
as
well?
Hold on, let me give you some context. Let me give you some context. During Superstars transfer to the Southwark Playhouse.
26th of November to 21st of December, everybody.
26th of November 2019. It is seen by somebody who commissions television shows, and therefore very quickly you have a TV show commissioned about your role or yourself as the sister of a famous person and how it affects your life. It's a Fleabag-esque sitcom. They film it very quickly, and by this time next year you are suddenly offered £500,000 to be on Dancing on Ice because you've had a 6-episode sitcom based on your own life commissioned and and broadcast.
In the sitcom, am I playing myself and Chris Martin from Coldplay is my brother?
No.
Or is it that I'm in a sitcom that I've written and it's really brilliant and funny and great and everyone loves it and it plays on the theme of having a celebrity sibling?
You're playing yourself. Mm-hmm. You've changed the name of your brother, but everybody knows anyway that it's all about your brother.
Just tried to pitch that. No, I didn't really. I'm not pitching that. But
this is a bit of a jokey question, but also actually I think it's really interesting because...
It's really complex.
Yeah,
the answer exactly. Is no. I wouldn't go on it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... Listen, but also what you've done there is made it difficult because you've actually suggested quite a fun show. Whereas if you were like, would you go on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here? I'd say absolutely not. If it was Celebrity Big Brother, no.
I would argue that I would learn to ice skate and dance
at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally subjective fun though, because I would argue that I'm a Celebrity is a much better produced and fun show than Dancing on Ice, which I think is...
I've not even really watched Dancing on Ice. To be honest, look, no. Someone actually had requested who works from, come from an entertainment company had wanted to come and see the show for free, and I said no because I'm just not interested. I won't like, and I won't talk to any tabloids about the show, and I won't anymore. I know I did talk to Good Morning Britain, and I didn't realise that tabloid papers were going to write about it. But after that, I said I won't speak to any tabloids, and I'd already said I wouldn't, but that's a story for another time. I just didn't know what Good Morning Britain was.
Really?
And I just got excited because I was like, I can go on TV and talk about my show.
Yeah, it's great. I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of in that stuff, to be honest. But I totally understand the natural feeling.
You don't want to give them
any
more.
Yeah.
You don't want to give those little fuckers any more stuff to take.
What's the biggest lie that you've read in the press about? I think you started at the beginning, you mentioned one headline, but about your brother or you or your family? Because I've talked to some of the other guests about this, and some of the stuff that's happened. One of our guests said that his mum used to throw boiling hot tea at the press who were outside their house.
Really?
Yeah.
Quite a funny story. That's good on her.
Mm.
they're poison. I just thought of a funny time when just after Apple, my niece, was born. I went to see Chris and Gwyneth in Gwyneth's current flat, which is in London, and we wanted to go for a walk, and Chris and I needed to get somewhere, and there were loads of paparazzi outside, and so Chris gave me a water bottle, like a you know, one that you can suck, like with a nozzle-y thing,
yeah.
And he was like, "Do what you want," and we went outside, and I remember being like, "I'm going to protect my brother," and so I like started trying to squeeze the water at the paparazzi, but it all fell on my foot. So I've just got a really wet shoe.
Can I just say that the motion you're doing to describe this story
looks like I'm wanking.
It does look like you're wanking. And
I know,
and
but I was only...
It's important that
I
the
was
listeners
12,
know.
No, I was, how old was I? 14. So I didn't know what that was at the time.
But the journalist didn't catch
you. It was
you.
Before I went to Pizza Express with Alex Shipp. and I lost my virginity.
I feel like that's a story we can't go into too deeply.
The water splashing on me and Shippy.
The virginity, yeah. Alex Shipp.
We can't go. No, come to see the show. It doesn't go into that deeply either. Sorry, Shippy, if you're listening. So
you're squirting
the water. What's
the
biggest lie? I squirted the water and it didn't go on any of the paparazzi. I just looked like an idiot with a really wet foot in the end.
Right.
But it was a valiant thing that I was trying to do to protect my bro.
Nice. Cute.
What's the biggest lie? There's loads of them.
I mean,
there's like a new one every week about my brother.
Yeah. How does he deal with that?
Doesn't read it.
Right.
I think you'd only probably read it if it got to a point where it was like there was a big thing happening. But it's like, I don't know, they write about a different person that he's dating every week or like they do with all the celebrities. But those aren't really the big lies. The one that kind of... I read one that said I had a net worth of like... I can't remember. I actually said it in the Times article. But
now 2.5 million, I think it said, didn't it?
Something ludicrous. Yeah. I had like 40 quid in the bank. And... I mean, I had some coming in that week. I'd made about probably £200 from doing one of my side jobs that was due, but that was about it.
Yeah.
I was like, where's the 2.5 million?
I know.
That'd be lush. But so things like that. But then, and then also...
That is a great example. A lot of people who read stuff in the press say, there's no smoke without fire. But that is a perfect example of they've clearly just made that up.
Yeah.
And so they clearly do just make loads of stuff up.
But they must have done that based on like looking at what films I've been in and then making an assumption about how much I would have been paid for those, not realising that I'd only done half a day's work on most of them.
I'm not even
sure. Lewis Capaldi did a thing on Instagram where he was saying that he'd just read that his net worth was loads more money than he actually had. Anyway, another lie was that my dad sold his caravan company, right, which is like a tiny little caravan business in Devon. It had sold for like millions, and it actually in reality absolutely didn't, like, weigh a lot less. It sold for a lot less than a million, and it was just ludicrous that they wrote that.
And you come across as really, really protective of all your family, but also especially your brother. How does it feel to you? Yeah, you really do.
I just made a show where I slate them all. But thanks.
That's you're very nice. Quick. I mean, when you talk about it, you're very quick to, you know, if you say anything that you deem to be even the slightest bit negative towards any of them, then you're very quick to back it up with positivity. That really comes across. But what I was going to ask is, how does it instinctively and intrinsically make you feel when you read lies or people slagging off your brother? Or, for instance, the thing that made me think about this was you brought up your niece, for instance, and there was a lot of shit about the names that your brother and his wife gave your
Yeah,
your
I mean,
niece
I thought it was I thought it was a joke. I love the name now.
Right, but at the time.
I woke up in, I remember it so distinctly, waking up in, I don't know why, but there was basically, at my school, there was like a sick bay, and I'd gone for a nap there because I'd been doing a show the day before. I was in The Diary of Anne Frank, and Chris hadn't been able to come because Apple was being born. And I remember him calling me, and he was like, "We've called it Apple." And Chris used to do this thing where he would call me up.
"We've called her Apple," I hope he said.
Sorry, yeah. "We've called her Apple." And Chris used to do this thing all the time where he would call up the home phone when I was at home and put on an accent or like pretend to be somebody else for ages.
Yeah.
And I would fall for it. And so when he said, "We've called her Apple," I was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, good one. What have you actually called her?" And then he was like, no, Apple. And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And then I met her, and it's such a nice name, actually. Yeah. And there's so many worse names you can have.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, you call your daughter a fruit, and people are going to say things. That's what I said earlier about, like, sometimes they make themselves an easy target, but, you know, you got to just do what you want to do.
No.
But how do I feel about reading nasty things about my bro? I don't really read.
Yeah.
And what I do, obviously you do read them, but I find it quite funny.
Yeah.
When it's something that's like rude about Coldplay, or I remember someone who didn't know he was my brother was slagging Coldplay off.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoyed sort of sitting there and listening. Not because I'm like, ha ha ha, we're laughing at my brother, but it's just like, well, this person doesn't know that Chris is my brother.
It's like being invisible.
I don't know. I am protective of my family. Now, if I read something like a bad bit of review about anyone, I just feel like, oh, cool. They're really good. I think they're really good. And they've had a bad review. So,
yeah.
That's okay if I get a bad one. Yeah, quite a boring answer to your question, but.
No, it's good. What is the most unusual thing that's happened to you as a result of being Chris's sister?
Unusual?
Hmm.
Well, it'd be unusual. I watched Go to the Golden Globes.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
And Meryl Streep put her arm around me and was like, "You want me to babysit her, Gwynnie?" And I was like, "Oh, Meryl, yeah, babysit me." And then I had a steak with Emily Blunt and John Krasinski.
Oh, I love those guys.
And they wouldn't have had a clue who I was, but I went there with Gwyneth as her date once. And
Gwyneth sounds so lovely. Everything you say about Gwyneth sounds lovely.
Well, she's my sis.
Yeah.
Obviously ex-sister, but still... Like I say, you don't have a 12-year-long relationship. What's really funny is when people would always be like, "Have you met Gwyneth?" And you're like, "She married my brother about 5 years ago. You'd hope we'd met." So that was that. I didn't mean that in a name-droppy way, that story, but that was just quite a bonkers like situation because
that's something that wouldn't
something
normally
not many people would do,
exactly.
But it was a really dreamlike thing, and that was a really cool night as well because I was just like, "Oh yeah, like these are all just quite normal people actually. This whole ceremony is bullshit,
yeah,
and actually really boring."
And I'm feeling brave now because it just came into my head. But you talked about how you thought it was a joke when you heard about Apple, but. Talk to me about what you thought when you first heard about consciously uncoupling, because that's something that definitely I'd never heard of before, Chris and Gwyneth. I know a lot more about it now, actually.
I just thought of such a bum-out way of answering your question that would have made you feel really bad. But because it was, I was just sad that my brother was going through something really difficult, so I didn't really care about what they called it.
No, but that's. I think that's exactly the right way to answer, because nobody in the world even gave a shit about that. They just gave a shit about the way that they'd done it, and it made them think, oh, what a classic actress slash musician or whatever. But what?
Yeah.
But people need to remember that these people have real lives, and that's the way they deal with it. That's the best way to for them to go through it.
Well, that's good. You're an empathetic young lad.
Not young.
Yeah, you are young. I think that was my over. I mean, maybe I had a second of being like, "What's conscious uncoupling?" But to me, it wasn't funny. It was like, "That's really shit for them to have to go through and to have to announce your divorce in a way like that."
Yeah.
And actually, if you read anything about conscious uncoupling, it's actually really great.
Really great, yeah.
And coming from a family where my parents split up as well and maintained a really good kind of partnership in terms of being a team and being friends and tried to make it have the least amount of impact on us as kids, the fact that, like, Chris and Gwyneth, that's essentially what conscious uncoupling is, is basically like, let's make this as comfortable and easy as possible as we can for the kids, because divorce is horrible.
Yeah.
And it's like, who gives a shit what you're calling it? But it's that thing, you know. I mean, if you want me to, like, vaginal steaming, I don't have any. I feel really strongly about that. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And jade eggs and whatever. Some things she puts on Goop, I really do. I do really think, like, what's going on there? But with conscious uncoupling, I just, yeah, I think I don't really care what they call it.
You know, so for me, just think, you know, they took some shit to be trailblazers in terms of that, to be honest.
Yeah, and loads of people do it now.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the final question, Nicola, that we ask everyone.
I thought that was the final question.
You, no.
Oh.
Final question is, if you could live your life all over again but without having had a famous brother, would you swap it?
Oh, no. I think I've had, like, cool experiences as well as difficult ones, and no.
Very good, succinct, pithy answer, and perfect. Thank you so much for being our guest on
Thanks for
Almost
having me.
Famous. Guys, make sure you drop the episode a comment and subscribe to Almost Famous, and go and see Nicola at the Southwark Playhouse in mid to late November, where you can see her show Superstar, because it really is excellent. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.